Hi, I'm Serene Ardalianu, and I want to welcome you to Destined for Success. The purpose of the summit is to teach you how to bridge the gap between surviving and thriving by reprogramming your body and mind. My intention is to educate, inspire, and empower you to live up to your highest potential by providing you with real-world tools and strategies that you can implement for immediate results. Today, I am honored to present you with Bernie Siegel. He is truly an inspiration, and his life is a miracle. He is an author and a doctor and just a very powerful, impactful soul, and I am honored to have him here with us today. Bernie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bernie, yeah. I would love it if you would share kind of your story of how you got to where you are today as far as helping people, and especially what it is that you understand about love.
Well, you know, what immediately popped into my head when you were introducing things was the surviving and thriving words. So many people that I know of are well today when they accepted the fact they had a short time left to live. And what did they then do? What was really, you would define as thriving, see? They weren't trying to survive anymore. They accepted their mortality and decided to enjoy the short time they had left. And I always remember calling up a family to ask why I wasn't invited to the funeral. And the man who had gone halfway across the country, his quote was, "I'm going there to die because it's so beautiful there." When I called, he answered the phone a year later and said, "It was so beautiful here, I forgot to die." And so again, you see, what is the message your body gets when you're trying to survive versus I'm happy to thrive now? I have another letter that ends with, "I bought a dog, put it in a backyard wildlife habitat, laughed more, took some vitamins, and I didn't die. Now I'm so busy, I'm killing myself. Help, where do I go from here?" Now again, these are all people who had cancer who accepted what their doctor said. You have a short time left. That also kills people. See, words become swords. In other words, if you write, as one of our children did on an art project, words, 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 you notice they become swords, 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 swords. So there are people who don't choose to thrive. See, you have 2 months to live. You go climb into bed. Well, here's, again, I don't make up any of these stories. You're a grandfather. You love playing with your grandchildren, and you like betting on horses. He's told he has cancer, not a long time to live, but he's enjoying his life. And then he developed cataracts and couldn't play with his grandchildren or read the paper and bet on the horses. He wants cataract surgery. His health plan said, "No, you're not going to live 6 months. We're not wasting money on cataract surgery." He went home, climbed into bed, and died in a week. Now, that's the power of an authority figure's words. I help people thrive by lying to them. Now, that may sound terrible, you know, as a doctor. But if I lied to you and you didn't die, would you be upset with me? No. So I have an article on my website entitled "Deceiving People into Health." Because as an authority figure, my words were hypnotic. They believed what I said. So when I say deceiving people, I didn't tell them, you know, well, think of the television commercials, see? You can use this for your depression or your headache, but you could become sterile, have a heart attack, develop cancer, lose interest in sex. You know, when by the time they're done with the commercial, they say, "Thank you, I'll keep my headache." And so again, doctors tend to protect themselves too, like the TV commercial. See, these things can happen to you. But I would say it in a way that they knew it didn't have to happen. And it didn't happen to everybody. And I would also do a lot of work with drawings. How do you feel about your job, your relationship, your treatment? Think about Monday morning. It's not about thriving. We have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses on Monday. See? And that also relates to attitude. It's hard for me to not keep telling all these stories. At the hospital, I gave a gift to people I saw on the hospital staff who were helping patients. You know, it could be simple things, helping them get in an elevator, get out of a wheelchair. But when I saw them acting out of compassion, I would walk over and gruffly say, "What is your name?" And they all figured, "What the hell did I do?" They would tell me their name, thinking, "What is this doctor going to say about me to people? What is he? But they were afraid to ask. But then, see, I'd show up 2 weeks later with a pin that I had a jeweler friend of mine make with their name on it and a rainbow behind it. And I said, "This is a gift. I want to thank you for the way you treat patients." And it created what I call the subversive organization in the hospital. Because if you had that pin on, there's only one place you could have gotten it, from Siegel. Well, one day I walked up to a medical secretary. I said, "What's your name?" And she's the only person who ever said, "Why do you want to know?" I said, "Truth is, I want to give you a gift for your wonderful attitude." She said, "Sit down." I sat down, and she said, "I've had this job for 2 years. When I took it, I couldn't stand the nurses or doctors, the way they treated me. I loved the patients. So I went to the office, and I said, 'I quit. I'm going home.' They said, 'You can't quit. Your contract says you have to give 2 weeks' notice.' She said, I got up for 2 weeks miserable. The last day, I got up happy, and I went to work happy. And I noticed all the people around me were happy. So I didn't quit. I decided to come in happy." Okay? And here she is radiating her happiness and attracting me to her behavior. And we all have that choice. You know, if you see life as, "I got to survive, I got to do this, I got to do that." No, you don't. Okay? He who seeks to save his life will lose it. He who's willing to lose his life will save it. Now, what's Jesus trying to tell us? Okay? If you become your unauthentic self because of what others impose on you, you lost your life. Then again, what the hell's the point of living? Okay? But when you're willing to lose the untrue self, and I say this to a lot of high school students, you don't commit suicide, you don't kill your parents out of revenge, you become your authentic self and start living your life and thriving. See? One woman I know, when I saw her, she was dressed so outrageously, I was getting a headache because she was sitting in front of me in the audience. I mean, an iridescent red dress. I realize her husband is with her, and I couldn't figure how he let her out of the house looking, you know, this bizarre. But she handed me a letter at the end of my lecture, which I then read at home. It said, "My mother told me I embarrassed her. I was a failure. She never wanted me. She dressed me in dark clothes so nobody would notice me. And then I developed cancer, and you gave me permission to become my authentic self." And I said to her, "You didn't need my permission in the first place, but it was from reading my books." And she wrote in her letter, "I went out and I bought a red dress and red high heel shoes." And when I read that, I forgave her for giving me a headache. But what I do now is, she lives in Pennsylvania, I'm in Connecticut. A couple of times I've gone out to lecture and she, I know, is coming. And I will always say her name, "Will you please stand up?" And invariably she's got on a red outfit. And I then point out her story. But her quote was, "My mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer." And 70% of high school students said they considered suicide. See? And as I said, I try to empower them. As one teenager said to me, "You're my CD." I said, "What the hell is that?" She said, "You're my chosen dad." So that touched my heart. And I tell everybody now, you need somebody to love you, I'll be your chosen dad. And believe me, it has saved multiple lives, because then people realize they were significant and important. See, all authority figures, teachers, doctors, politicians, if we said to people, I love you, they not, don't drink soda, don't smoke. No, I love you. Then they stop smoking and drinking, you know, large amounts of sugar, etc. Harvard students were asked, did your parents love you? Those who said yes, 35 years later, 24% had suffered a major illness. Those who said no, 98% had suffered a major illness. And I mean it. If we wanted to save lives, and I'm talking about everything from health to violence, what do? You love the children. You have them grow up with a house full of pets. I mean, our children spend time, they're all grown now, but they grew up what I call the Siegel Zoo. I mean, it's described in my latest book, Love Animals and Miracles, because of what people have learned from animals and all the stories they sent me. But I know our children rescue lives. See, think of this test. It rained heavily yesterday, and I take the dog out for a walk, and I see loads of worms on the pavement. What do? The answer is you pick them up and you put them back on the earth. Now, a lot of people think you're nuts, and I used to think I was very neurotic to do that, until I read that that's what Schweitzer did. He said, if you have a reverence for life, you rescue the earthworms, and you give insects a leaf to climb on if you see them in a puddle. When I read that, it rescued me. And it's not simple to know why you are who you are. See? It has to do with things I've experienced that I never searched for. Somebody over the phone said to me, why are you living this life? Because I was so busy. I went into a trance and experienced a past life in which I killed with a sword. And I really felt that had a lot to do with why, as a surgeon, I now cured people and saved lives with a sword. I had a near-death experience as a four-year-old. I almost choked on a toy. I was very upset when I didn't die, as most children are. I mean that. I've talked to a lot of them. They all felt the way I did. Oh, my parents are going to find me dead. I feel bad. But this is so interesting. I don't want to not die. I mean, the first words out of my mouth when I didn't die were, who did that? I mean, that may sound crazy, but I was angry as hell. I made a decision and nobody was paying attention, you know? But I think it had a lot to do with why I went off on a spiritual life without making the choice. I didn't understand why I was doing things, why I shaved my head in the 1970s, which embarrassed, our children were mortified, we have five of them, that I'm acting crazy again, you know? But I read Jung, and he talked about shaving the head as something that monks do to uncover spirituality. And I think when you want to thrive, yes, you uncover your spirituality. God becomes a resource. It's not about guilt. I mean, there's so many aspects of religions in which people feel God is punishing me with cancer, say, or with other problems, because I'm not a perfect person. What I loved was from Maimonides. He said, disease is a loss of health. And if your neighbor loses something, you help them to find it and return it to them. So for people to please, if they're going to thrive, don't see God as their punisher, you know, but see disease as a loss of health, and God is helping you find your health. See, when people start to thrive, a wonderful symbol in Solzhenitsyn's book that says it all, because doctors, you get well when you're not supposed to. See, what does a doctor say? Oh, you had a miracle. You had a spontaneous remission. That's because doctors are dumbbells and not trained properly. I don't mean it's their fault, but it's how that we are trained. I learned to ask patients, why didn't you die when you were supposed to? Eh? Because what changed me was one of my patients saying to me, I need to know how to live between office visits. And I began to see if you help them live, they didn't die when they were supposed to. So I would say, what's your story? And they always had one. And in Solzhenitsyn's book, he describes the book Cancer Ward. He describes self-induced healing, see, not a spontaneous remission, as a rainbow-colored butterfly fluttering out of the book that one of the men is reading to the other guys. That's what people, you want to thrive, you have to bring into your life a rainbow-colored butterfly. What am I talking about? The butterfly is a symbol of transformation. See? From the cocoon, out it comes, and it has to struggle. Life, yes, is what I call a school, and getting an education can be tough. But if you use all the things that happen to you as teachers, then again, the transformation occurs. And what is the rainbow? When the transformation occurs, the harmony is in front of you. Because literally every color represents an emotion. And you see this in every day of life. I mean, red is a color of passion. You know, it can be danger. It can be love, too. But the red light is saying stop. See? The green is a color of health, nature, go. Purple, spiritual. And I love it when you see in different stores how they change. Stop and Shop, where I always say I go for therapy, just to interact with people, has changed their employee shirts. See, from red and white, which didn't attract you to them. I mean, white is a blank, nothing, to purple and yellow. See? So they're more likely to help you with the yellow energy and the spiritual nature. You feel comfortable going over to say, hey, I have a problem, and talking to them. And all those things are a part of our lives, and we need to be open to them, pay attention to our dreams and our drawings. Because again, to get back to a medical aspect, if you draw your treatment as a devil giving you poison, which one woman did, you have every side effect in the book. Another woman said, here's my gift from God. She had no side effects. I mean, her doctor thought the x-ray machine was broken, you know, because she had no reaction. But I said, it's her belief, see. She, to quote patients, I get out of the way and I let it go to my tumor. Yeah, now doctors don't believe that until they meet that story. See, then they're convinced that Siegel isn't crazy. And really, calling my patients crazy became an affectionate term because they learned the power of hope. See, if you're going to thrive, you have to have hope. And hope is real. You know, I'm grunting because, you know, I give a lecture and doctors and say, you're giving people false hope. What is false hope? Do people win the lottery? Yeah. What are the odds? Not very good. But it happens. And the same can be true with the disease. But when you're afraid of failing, say being a loser, then you don't participate in your life and you don't thrive. So there were patients who have said to me, I don't have time to read your book. I'm not an artist. I had my 10-year-old son draw the picture for me. You know, of your treatment and so forth. I mean, what are you worried about? But again, it's how they were brought up. Say, you're a failure, you don't do anything right. So they're afraid to participate. And let me, I keep thinking of more stories, how we can help others. In first grade, this woman, and she wrote a little book called Purple about it. The teacher said, everybody draw a picture. She drew a picture, and in it, a tent she drew in purple. The teacher came around looking at all the desks and drawings and said to her, a tent isn't purple. That's a color for dead people. I'm not putting your picture on the wall with all the other children. In second grade, she said, Mr. Barda told us all to draw pictures. I left my paper blank. And you're sitting there saying, what's going to happen now? He came over, put his hand on her shoulder and said, "The snowfall, how clean and white and beautiful." See, he changed her life. And as an adult is when she's writing this story, because it became a part of her life. And when we can do that for people, I always say, you don't have to like what your children or others are doing, but you love them. Then they know that. I remember Robert Frost, he said, home is a place that when you go there, they have to take you in. So you know you're safe there. And then you can be your own self and thrive. I didn't do things my parents wanted me to do a lot of times. You know, even my career as a doctor. They thought that was kind of strange, and there's no way they could offer me any help doing something like that. But they didn't say, no, you can't. You know, you have to go into the business world. And so I was able to live my life. And my mother, I would say, was a very good therapist. So was my father. I always say, what mottos do you live by? Because it never occurred to me. One man's hand went up. He said, you didn't ask us what mottos we're dying by. You know, the other stories I've told you. Because it never occurred to me. I had loving parents and grandparents. And my mother, if I came home and said, Mom, what should I do? Do what makes you happy. So I felt she never answered my question, which used to upset me as a kid. You know, I'm looking for help, you know, and all you say is do what makes you happy. But she put me in touch with my feelings. Now I say to people, let your heart make up your mind. Yeah. And then, Ma, I had a horrible day at school. Wait till I tell you all the things that happened. God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. That used to drive me nuts too. You know, you're not listening. But I learned that most of the significant spiritual people had mothers like that. Norman Vincent Peale became a friend of mine years ago. He said his mother used to say, Norman, if God slams one door, further down the corridor another will be open. And there's a country western song where if the doors are all shut, look for a window, you know. But again, that's when you thrive. And material things, my father's father died of tuberculosis when he was 11. The family had no resources, no insurance, nothing. And six children to try to survive. And yet I heard him say one of the best things that ever happened to him was my father dying when I was 11 years old. I said to him, what the hell were you talking about? Because he was interviewed by somebody. He said, it taught me what was important about life. And it wasn't material things. My father spent more time helping other people, not worried about, you know, was he going to pay his bills and what kind of car he had. No, he was always helping others. That worried my mother sometimes, you know, because she would say, a lot of these people never pay you back. But that wasn't his issue. It was helping them. And I've learned, you want to thrive, here's the key. I found a story that I was reading to our children because I thought it was wonderful. And then I noticed it was in a magazine I found that was hidden in one of our cabinets. And then I suddenly yelled, hey, I wrote this. I mean, they're all laughing, but I didn't realize it was an experience of mine. You go out camping. You're in a rugged area, away from life and everybody. One of the people who had come with this camping group was pregnant. And she, I thought, had made a poor decision. She said, oh, I'm not due for a month or so. But, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere. What if something happens? And a few days after we were there, somebody came to our tent and said, can you come? The woman's in labor. You're the only doctor here. There's no one we can communicate with or contact. So I said, sure. So I went over to her tent, and she delivered this little kid who wasn't breathing. And I started working, you know, compressing the chest, breathing for the kid, doing everything. And I handed it to the mother, too, after a few minutes, to put it against her breast, because kids have come back to life when they have felt the mother's breast, but nothing worked. And she said to me, when I reached for the baby again, "Look, it's dead. I can accept it. Stop. You don't have to keep doing this." I said, "I can't stop." And I started again, breathing for the kid. And suddenly he took a breath, and the cyanosis, the blue color, disappears, and he pinks up, and he's breathing. And I gave him to the mother, and I walked outside. I looked up, and I said, "I've done something real at last." And that meant so much to me. I can't explain that feeling that you've helped a life. I had it again after my first book, Love, Medicine, Miracles, came out. In this case, when I realized it was number one on the New York Times bestseller list, that meant I had helped millions of people, not just, you know, one baby, but in the same way, I had helped millions to thrive and survive. And I remember walking down to get our mail after looking at the morning paper and saying, "I've done something real at last." I'm looking up at the sky. It's like saying, "God, thanks for this opportunity, you know, that I've been able to help other people." And again, I'd say, you want to thrive, you want to make your life meaningful, help someone else to live. And when I get these notes and letters, or even meet somebody when I take our pets to the veterinarian, "Oh, do you remember me?" And I meant something to them. I did a lot of children's surgery, so I touched their hearts because they knew I cared about them. I became their parent. And even the eye doctor a month ago, you go in, we have a new doctor, ours retired. "Are you Dr. Siegel?" "Yes." "Why are you asking?" "Because you took care of me when I was 9 years old." And suddenly, I'm home. You know what I mean? We're two people. We're not the secretary and the patient. We're family. And I think, again, you want to thrive, then become family with the world. And consciousness is not local. So you walk down the street and pick somebody out coming towards you. Send them your love in your mind, and watch the look they give you when they walk past you.